So, Colleen, welcome. So, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background and then get on to what your current sort of field is.
Well, hello, and thank you very much for having me. I studied political science with a focus on the Middle East and North Africa. But I've always been, I grew up in a family of musicians and music enthusiasts. So for me, music has always been a way to connect with people, to connect with different cultures, and also to connect with my own culture. Because, so I'm from Brittany, I'm from the Gallo country, but I grew up abroad, I mean, outside of Brittany, in the mainly, I mean, Paris and then the Lyon and the southeast of France. Mm-hmm. And music was the way for me to connect with my culture. So I would go to Mediathèque and to public libraries. We have an amazing system of public libraries in France with a lot of CDs and music. And so for me, listening to Breton music and also Irish and Celtic music in general was a way to connect with that part of my identity that I couldn't live on a day-to-day basis in the south of France.
So what are you doing at the moment? What's your thing?
So I am based between France and Brittany and the UK.
Right.
So I go back and forth, and so I work as a journalist.
Journalist, right?
So I write articles, mainly articles about music and culture, mainly about Arab music and culture, but also increasingly about Celtic culture, Celtic music, and particularly the links and the potential musical dialogues that exist between the Celtic culture or Celtic cultures from the Arab world.
Yeah.
They have a lot in common in many ways. I'm not trying, I mean, first of all, because we're all humans, so there's a degree of universality in a way. And also, there are common features. Sometimes they just cannot be explained, the reason why this is similar. But, for instance, the sounds, the bagpipes, the double reed instruments, is a great example I've been working on.
Yeah.
The traditional costumes as well.
Yeah.
You would find a lot of very similar patterns or knots, or even just colours. And I think, again, it's not because there is a common origin to the Celtic and the Arab culture, but it's just because, clearly, in a way, particularly in the past two centuries, Europe and what lies at the south and the east of the Mediterranean have been intensively in touch, in connection. And so sometimes you would find bits, you know, from one part of the Mediterranean to the other, and even beyond. So I write articles, I teach also at Sciences Po University in France, and I create shows as well. So I would call them enhanced readings, maybe. So
enhanced readings?
Yes.
Okay, of what? I mean, so you say a show.
Yeah.
So in a theatre?
Yes, in a theatre.
And an enhanced reading of?
So I would write my own texts and I would put them in image and sounds.
Okay.
In the sense that I would read and then I would have either a live musician accompanying me or I would have recorded music.
Right.
I work a lot with archives.
Okay.
And the same goes for images and videos, so I would usually use archives. I also worked with a live artist who drew as I spoke. And usually the themes my shows are about, they would entail questions of, I mean, it's always about culture and it's always about the links between culture and politics. So far I've worked mainly on the Arab world. My first show was about the golden age of Iraqi music, so Baghdad from the 1920s to the 1960s. And the idea with the words and the music and the videos and all the archives was to convey a public who is not really familiar with Iraq, to convey a very small idea about how Baghdad looked like at that time. Because, for instance, particularly in France, when we think about Iraq, we think about the war, we think about recent history, but we don't have all that information.
Yeah.
And it was also a way for me to talk about the Jewish communities in the Arab world, how instrumental they were to the development of urban music.
Yeah.
and how they were expelled from Iraq because they were Jews, and when they arrived in Israel, they were also marginalized because they were Arabs. So for me, this like dual identity is a very interesting topic to work on. So that's an example.
Okay. So it's really interesting when you say about the influences or the similarities between, say, Breton music and Arab music. And for me as a musician, I think one of the interesting and one of the most appealing parts of Breton music and Arabic music, or Arab music, Arab origin, is the non-Western tonality. Because you talked about the links and where do those links come from? And I think you said they were, you said something about sort of non-cultural, but humanistic.
Mm.
Can you get into that a bit more?
Basically, a lot of traditional music and melodies in the world, including in Europe, traditionally were microtonal. And when it was put into writing, and when classical music developed, particularly after Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, we had this idea that music had to be either in a major or a minor mode. But particularly in regions where culture was transmitted orally as well, and it was not put into writing, I guess there was much more space, in a way, to interpret the songs and the melodies as you wanted it to. So it had everything to do with the ear, basically, how you heard it and how you sang it, or how you played it. There were no frets on the instruments that were used, for instance, and which is something that also exists in the art world.
Yeah.
But there is, as everybody knows, in central Brittany, there's the Crespray's Academy, whose very existence is about, among other things, but about bringing together all these microtonal traditions from different regions of the world. So, obviously, Breton music, but also Turkish music, Persian, Arabic.
And the Eastern European Balkans. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, when is your next show?
I don't know. So I just finished writing a book, so I'm also writing books. That book was about Paris as the capital of Arab literature and thought.
Which was when?
Or
as of now, or as of...
Well, it was... So, the book covers a very wide... period in time from the antiquity until today, but the main focus is on the 19th century, basically.
Right.
It's after the revolution until, let's say, the 1970s and 1980s.
Right.
And the idea, or the thesis, was that Paris emerged as the ex-situ capital of Arab culture at the same time as it emerged as a cultural centre, as a global cultural centre. So it's as much a history of Arab cultural presence in Paris and the West as it is a social history of Paris.
Okay.
The coming of age of Paris, in a way, the emergence of Paris as a global power. In a way, it's a love letter also to the cultural relations between France and the Arab world, but I have to say that this relationship is a very toxic one, or has been a very toxic one. This could have been the title of the book, actually.
What's the title?
We haven't decided upon a definitive title yet with my publisher, but if I were given free reins, I'd say I'd name it A Very Toxic Relationship. But also, as a Breton person, it's not that I identified, but for me, what was interesting about all this story between Paris and the Arab world was that it was a story also of the dynamics between the centre and the peripheries. So this is about Arab culture, but sometimes a similar thought or a similar path, a way of thinking could have been applied also to this relationship between the peripheries within mainland France and Paris.
And certainly Brittany.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was the second book, and I'm not sure yet whether or not I want to start writing another one soon, but it might be more personal, or might have to do more about Brittany and about
That's fascinating, Colleen. A really interesting conversation. I'll stop there because I think we probably could go on for about a month. But that's great. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you.